Knights, I bid you welcome to your new home. Let us ride to Camelot.
We're knights of the round table. We dance when we're able. We do routines in all the scenes of footwork impeccable. We dine well here in Camelot. We eat ham and jam and spam a lot. We're knights of the round table. Our shows are for the table. So many times we've given rhyme to our quite clumsy rainbow. We're off the mad in Camelot. We sing from the diaphragm.
Okay, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We are back. This is the Tuesday Morning Roundtable. We have with us in a moment, we'll have Jeff Nyquist calling in. The prepper tip of the day is to read the book World Without Cancer by G. Edward Griffin. I need to give this prepper tip of the day a lot more frequently because everybody doesn't hear it. In there, you will find the protocols for not getting cancer. And very important. I've been following those protocols for 25 years. My wife, Dr. Moore, did not. She asked me about 5 or 6 weeks before she died. She said, "Honey, are you mad at me because I didn't follow the protocols like you?" I said, "No, babe, I'm not mad at you. I'm sad. I'm disappointed. I'm not mad at you, but that was your choice. You want to not get cancer, read the book, follow the protocols like I do." The title of the book is World Without Cancer by G. Edward Griffin. All right. Looks like our next caller is Mike in Kentucky. Good morning, Mike. Mike in Kentucky, go ahead.
TV. Yeah, I'm not an engineer, and I don't pretend to be one on TV. Good Tuesday morning to you. But I don't know. I learned as a young guy.
I can
guy.
Barely hear you, Mike. Your audio is really weak on my end.
Can you hear me better now?
Not really. Maybe my engineer can turn your volume up a little bit. I don't know.
That's possible. I sometimes get, let me try this other phone. Maybe that'll do it.
Okay, you're great now. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. So, I'm not an engineer and I don't pretend to be one on TV, but I learned as a young feller to listen to the menfolk talk, you know, and hide and be quiet, and sometimes you pick up on a few things. Now, different situations, I've learned that when you go to three-phase electricity, your electric bill can go down, even though you're using the same amperage. I've seen this on parking lot lights, you know, the lights that illuminate a parking lot. We had a right. car dealer doing a car show that got interrupted by the electrical crews reconfiguring their parking lot lights to three-phase. And the problem with cell phone tower sites is they often have a long run off of the up a hill, you know. And the voltage will drop if you're on single phase, which is 120, two-phase is 240, and three-phase is kind of hard to wrap your mind around. But it's basically a sine wave in three vectors. And what's going on is they've added all this fiber optic going up to these cell phone sites. And they've expanded the frequencies down to like channel 38 in the old UHF dial on your TV. That's like 600 megahertz band. So they have a lot more channels over a lot more frequencies, and they need a lot more amperage. And that will drop the voltage down when you go these long runs up the hill. So they're able to move the transformers up to the top of the hill and run the higher voltages up there in three phase, and then step it down to their 240 and 120 inside the transmitter shacks. As far as their generators.
Let me summarize what you're saying here, Mike. There's not necessarily anything nefarious. They found a way to do the same work and save money on Dr. Bill. Is that what you're saying?
Well, they need the voltage. And when you start drawing more current, it drops, or the amperage down, it drops the voltage down over long distance. So it saves the electricity company money and the cell phone shacks money. Now, that allows them to have more power to run on all these channels. Whatever the heck they're doing with it, as far as, you know, finding harmonic frequencies to burn out your hippocampus or, you know, whatever they're doing, activating nanotech, I don't know. But just the idea that they're going to three-phase only means that they need more power at the shack site because of the usage, or that they're adding, they're stacking on more transmitter modules for this so-called 5G. Because they've got more channels, and they're phasing out 3G completely if they haven't everywhere already. There's still vending machines and parking meters and some other stuff that they're still trying to convert, I think, from 3G. But anyway, just to clarify what that last caller last hour was saying, they've just simply expanded what they need.
Right. Okay.
So they have more capacity, and they need more capacity. So anyway, it's something I've studied for a long time. I listen to the engineers, but I'm not an engineer. So, okay. You know, if you really want an expert on it, they might concur with some of what I'm saying. But what concerns me is the infrastructure that they're installing is very vulnerable. I don't want to get into details about it, but it wouldn't take much of a wrecking crew to really wreck an entire town's communication systems. And people would die because you couldn't call 911.
It doesn't require explosives or weapons. All common hardware store tools can
Well, yeah, not a lot. Anyway, I'll leave it at that. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for the call. We have with us Jeff Nyquist. Jeff began a quest more than 37 years ago to understand, comprehend, eventually become quite expert in anything and everything to do with the International Commons Conspiracy. His website is jrnyquist.blog. I say again, jrnyquist.blog, where he writes one, sometimes two, excellent articles a week. And good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, John.
To have you back with us. Excellent audio. And I should mention Jeff's six books are available at Amazon.com. Jeff, I'm hearing that the government of Ukraine military is now, are they recruiting or conscripting younger men and older men? What's going on there, if you know, sir?
Well, they're conscripting people, and they have volunteers, too. You know, like in any war, you call up different groups of people.
Well, what I'm reading is that there's younger conscripts or volunteers and older both. Is there some accuracy to that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In fact, there's underage boys want to join. There's a lot of teenagers, you know, who have been with their mothers or their elderly grandparents in Europe as refugees who, you know, will sneak back into Ukraine to try to join up.
Right. Right. Well, it happens everywhere where teenagers do that. World War II, we had 14, 15-year-old farm boys from Iowa, Nebraska, and so forth that were U.S. Marines at Guadalcanal and so forth. But I just wondered if the government is conscripting these younger men and older men also, as opposed to them lying about their age and getting in.
They're not. The government in Ukraine, they're not conscripting people that are below the proper age to fight.
Okay. What would that age be, if you happen to know, sir?
I think you have to be 18.
Okay. All right.
The thing is, it's the idea that Ukraine is running out of men is you know, or that the Russians are running out of men. It's largely an economic question of what people in the, how many people from what age groups can they bring into service without disrupting parts of their economy?
Right, right. Well, that's true. My father was exempt for a while as a working for the atomic bomb project, and eventually that exemption expired, and he was drafted into the army and was in the Pacific down in Okinawa and so forth. It's an issue for any major war in any country, isn't it? Who not to draft and who to draft, isn't it?
Yeah, well, most countries in time of emergency end up with a conscription. And that's because not enough people volunteer in wars, usually, especially when a country's invaded. Ever since the French Revolution, there's been this system of mass induction of people to, you know, because the armies got so large. And this has been sort of a normal procedure then, where, you know, we saw in World War I, it was huge populations compared to 100 years earlier in the Napoleonic Wars, and they were mobilizing all the men. And so they had these enormous armies in World War I because, you know, they basically, except for the men who are essential for running the economy, and the women, of course, had to do a lot of men's work under those circumstances. That's what they did. In World War II, we saw something similar. Of course, given how many men were mobilized, the United States, I think it was over 10 million men were in the military.
More like 12 million, right?
Yeah,
right.
It was over 10. Yeah, and, you know, you think of a country like Germany at the time, which had half the population of the United States, they had similar numbers ultimately that were mobilized. So you can imagine the restrictions. The only way the Germans were able to do it was that they used Russian prisoners of war. They used people in other countries. They conscripted civilians, like people in France or Poland, to actually have to work in Germany, to do jobs in Germany. So you had an enormous policy where, to make up for the men being away at war, the Germans brought in what was essentially slave labor. They basically enslaved people from the countries they had occupied.
Amazing, amazing. Well, tell us about your most recent article published at jrnyquist.blog, sir.
Oh, it's a compilation of three interviews. I did an interview with Nevin Gusak talking about the Ukraine war and the way Russian propaganda was starting to turn the Republicans here. You had the first time now a majority of the majority in Congress is voting against support for Ukraine. And that has been the work of Russian information or disinformation, Russian active measures. They've been successful in driving a wedge between, Ukraine and certain people in countries supporting Ukraine. So we had that discussion. And then I had an audio interview with Jimmy from Brooklyn, the famous talk show caller, who was he's a guy that infiltrated the Communist Party in the
right.
United States.
Right.
And, of course, he knew Gus Hall, the former head of the Communist Party. He had access to all their documents, and he has studied them. And he knows all the strategies that they use, what Russia and China are doing, how the communists in this country are still working with Moscow. And then there's a third discussion I have with the German researcher, Mr. Alex Benesch, which, I talk to him for about 5-6 hours on every Saturday, but we record about an hour to an hour and a half of that. And oh my goodness, the things that, you know, different languages have researchers, and they're not always translated into other languages. So there's things we don't know about what's going on, what's been discovered in other countries. For example, the hidden history of Hitler. There is a book called The Hidden History by a writer named Machten about Hitler being a homosexual and being a secret agent in his earlier life. But what's interesting is that this background of Hitler's father, which is discussed by some German researchers, that if detectives had gotten wind of Hitler's father's domestic life, they may have thought that you had a potential, let's say, arsenic and old lace situation, where Hitler's father married an older woman for her money, and she dies. Then his next wife dies similarly. And then his third wife starts to get sick, but then he dies. And of course, is he poisoning his wives because he's each time he's getting a younger or better looking one? And did his 14-year-old boy, realizing he was poisoning his wives, got into the poison and poisoned him? There's a question, you know. And that kind of speculation, that was rather intriguing to me to hear that from a German researcher.
It's a twist I was not aware of before.
Yeah. And you add that to the Machtin's research showing that Hitler wanted to be an artist and go to Vienna, and his father wouldn't let him. And once his father died, he was able to go, but that Hitler had all these gay companions, and that Hitler had been arrested under unusual circumstances again and again in Vienna, but he wasn't held. And so why were the police kicking him loose? Was he a snitch? What was he doing? And, you know, there's a lot of speculation, but when Hitler goes to Munich just before World War I, he is again in an artist community that is largely homosexual. And then when the Nazi party's formed, Ernst Röhm, head of his bully boys, the brown shirts, is a homosexual. And that is a homosexual milieu, even in the Nazi party. And so these questions have come up. What's going on? Of course, I think there's a book called The Pink Swastika. I haven't read that one. I had read Machtin's book, but it's quite intriguing.
It is. And I like to point out, especially for younger people, that we're still living the consequences of historical events that took place 70, 80, 90 years ago, aren't we?
Yes, well, it especially has relevance because we have communist infiltration in the United States. They had communist infiltration in Germany in the 1920s, and of course in France and the other countries of Europe, and each one is a unique story. But the interesting thing about Germany is that the communists really helped Hitler into power. And of course, there's evidence that the communists knew Hitler's real background, that they had that information, and that Stalin wanted Hitler to come to power, all they had to do was to stop him was for the communists in Germany to combine with the Social Democrats, and Hitler wouldn't have been in power. Viktor Suvorov makes this point again and again in his writings and interviews. So why did Stalin, the head of the Soviet Union, the head of the communist movement worldwide, want Hitler to be in power in Germany? And that some of these facts put Hitler's invasion of Russia in a different light, because if Russia had a blackmail on Hitler, did that blackmail fail in 1941? And then when we look at 1944, when Germany is fighting both the Allies and the Russians, why is Germany able to take its panzer divisions and put them all on the Americans, and the Russians don't take advantage of that by attacking towards Berlin? Was there a deal between Hitler and Stalin even late in the war?
Really?
Oh, yeah. Well, look at the Battle of the Bulge. I mean, why was there an agreement? Because when the German Army Group Center collapsed in the summer of 1944, at the same time the Battle of Normandy was going on, they had the Russians had a straight path to Berlin through Warsaw, but the Russians stopped. They didn't go to Warsaw. They turned at the same time the German army was turning, and they attacked the Polish home army.
Amazing.
They attacked
Amazing.
The same enemy. They attacked Free Poland, had done in 1939.
We have a break. We have call numbers 512-248-8252. We'll be right back.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low-quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org. Smash that donate button like Russian peacekeepers smashing through the Azov neo-Nazi terrorists in the Donbass.
I don't think you can explain politics without looking at Jewish power any more than you can explain physics without dealing with gravity.
9/11 was a jointly conducted covert operation that involved multiple states, the Saudis, the Israelis, and what you could call the deep state in the United States.
With anti-Semitic remarks.
yeah, you're jiggling juice, we used to say, the dancing Israelis.
So even the Republicans now are compromising, and they're pushing issues that are destructive to the white race.
They would always say, like, are we just going to talk about this stuff on the radio? Like, what are we going to do about it?
Either we force the democracy to work by actually getting the ballot access, getting the candidates, getting in office, getting our message out there to the people, or we expose just how undemocratic it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
The Columbus Day Sale on Energy Cleaners is in effect right now until midnight the 9th. That would be $25 off Energy Cleaners, 25% off the mattress pads, and listen carefully, an additional 5% off the entire order if you use PayPal. That only applies to PayPal orders. You can place your order right at my website using PayPal, MasterCard, Visa, American Express, Discover. Send me a check. My address is right there. And my toll-free order line is 800-592-9543. Filling with Jeff Nyquist, his website's jrnyquist.blog. His book's for sale at Amazon. And Jeff, it looks like you once again have a way for people to subscribe to your website. Tell us about that.
Yeah, there's a PayPal button below every article or video where people can contribute to the site and keep me going.
Well, in addition, it looks like Visa, MasterCard, American Express, and Discover.
Yeah, you can use those, I think, to
I'm right there
give through PayPal. Yeah,
right. I'm right there at your website. Okay, you want to continue where you left off, Jeff?
Yeah. Well, Yeah, and of course, what's interesting about the reason that espionage history and is a very important thing is that it helps to show us what's going on in the past and how conspiracies, real conspiracies, the ones that intelligence services engage in, actually function, and how intelligence services try to penetrate each other, try to penetrate governments using blackmail or whatever to advance their country's cause. Even in the midst of a world war, you had, for example, Hitler's right-hand man. We know Martin Bormann was Louis Kielce, the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, showed that he was a Soviet agent. The head of the Gestapo under the Third Reich, Heinrich Mueller, was a Soviet agent. Of course, we know that from the memoirs of Walter Schellenberg and other sources. So but this is not historians. It's interesting. In my conversation with the German researcher Alex Benesch, is like, so why don't the mainstream historians deal with any of this? And it's because it opens this can of worms of espionage. You know, one of the first biographers of Hitler, Hugh Trevor Roper, was, you know, a British intelligence officer during World War II. So this can of worms, there's things these intelligence services don't want discussed. There's things that are difficult for historians to discuss because there's things that are still classified after all this time.
Really?
And because when you get into these areas, it becomes very murky. But yet, it is important to be aware that there may be this hidden side to history and to major figures like Hitler or Charles de Gaulle. And the same thing, if you look at Charles de Gaulle, for example, you've got Tyrod Devos Joly, the French intelligence officer, who was the guy that was forced to leave the French service, to hide in Mexico for a while, to defect to the Americans around the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis, or actually after the Cuban Missile Crisis, actually around the time that JFK was shot, because of Gallitzin's information that the heads of the French service were Soviet agents, and that the Soviet Union had basically taken over the French intelligence service under de Gaulle, and were actually ordering their agents to spy on the United States to find out about the United States ICBM capability, to hand that over to the Russians back in 1963.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Jeff, we've got a caller and holder. We got John in Texas. Good morning, John. Go ahead, John.
Hello. I have a question concerning Hitler's father. It has been alleged, I understand his mother became pregnant while she was a scullery maid working for a wealthy family, a Jewish family, they think.
No, not Hitler's mother.
Not Hitler's mother, Alois' mother.
Right, Hitler's father's mother, Schickle. Hitler's grandmother, right?
Yeah, Hitler's what was her name? Anna Maria Schickelgruber.
Yeah, well, if you go back to the records, Hitler's grandfather, Hitler, went in with his brother as a witness, and he did marry her, and he did take responsibility for the baby and basically said it was his. And so that kind of settles it.
Okay. Thank you for your call, John. We got a bottom of the hour break. We'll be right back.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Tom Bolton for EaseOff. I know so many of you are finding our EZ4 carcass drop and lift an essential tool for your meat processing operation, but today I want to spotlight four of our new products. First, our right height hog cradles with steel or aluminum frames. Our customers love this back-saving innovation that enhances sanitation and speeds production. Next, our beef cradles with stainless steel or aluminum frames eliminate rust and corrosion. We hope you'll compare our quality and prices for this essential part of your processing line. Our cradles are especially effective when used with our power skinner. And finally, our hook tumbler will keep your hooks clean and polished. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Einstein once said, "Future medicine will be the medicine of frequencies." What did he know? Imagine you hear ocean waves caressing a beach, or a favorite song from the past, or the trickle of the babbling brook. All of these are sound frequencies that positively affect us. Terahertz is a soothing, healing frequency that has been proven to resonate at the same frequency as healthy cells. It penetrates the body and stimulates new healthy cell growth. Want to diminish muscle aches, joint pains, and experience a greater sense of well-being? Tired of spending money on short-term remedies that never seem to work? Soothing, healing, relaxing terahertz frequency is now available and as handy as flipping a switch. Terahertz technology is changing the course of what we were taught about how to maintain our health and well-being. To learn more about this amazing breakthrough, go to naturalearthmedicine.com. That's naturalearthmedicine.com.
Company will fix bayonets! Fix! Attention!
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. My website is thelibertyman.com. We're living in the worst crime in human history. That's what I say. It's also being said by Dr. Michael Yaden, former vice president at Pfizer, former director of medical research at Pfizer. We have his articles and videos at thelibertyman.com. Lots there. Things that will help you achieve your goals. I do private consultations, by the way. Some details at thelibertyman.com. The energy cleaner sale, the Columbus Day sale, is in effect right now until midnight the 9th. $25 off energy cleaners, 25% off mattress pads, and an additional 5% off the entire order if you use PayPal. It only applies to PayPal orders only. You can place your order right there at my website using PayPal. You can call my toll-free order line 24 hours a day. That's 800-592-9543. Building with Jeff Nyquist. His website's jrnyquist.blog. His book's for sale at Amazon. Jeff, what direction would you like to go next, sir?
Well, you know, we just had the question about Hitler's grandmother, right, and whether, right, you know, supposedly a Rothschild or some wealthy, I forget the family that she worked for. But one of the things with the anti-Semitism that when you research conspiracy theories, it's important to keep in mind is that one of the reasons the Jewish conspiracy theories came about was because going back more than 1,000 years, Jews were used by aristocrats and by the powers that be in the late Rome and the Middle Ages as spies. And the founder of the Rothschilds household was a nobody from the Jewish ghetto in Frankfurt, who was very useful to the British. And so these British-German aristocratic families that were linked, because the British royal family, of course, is German in origin, they used these spies. And it isn't so much that there is a Jewish conspiracy, it's that there's aristocratic and royal power found these people useful as servants. And sort of that's how things went. Hannah Arendt writes about this sort of thing in her book on anti-Semitism, in her 3-volume work on totalitarianism, when you are in a more strict religious time, using Christians to perform certain services, well, you wouldn't hardly be able to get anyone. But a Jewish person in good conscience could do certain things because their precepts were different than Christians in certain areas.
Well, the consequences of what took place centuries ago, we're still living with, aren't we?
Well, yeah, of course. And of course, how things have evolved. You know, Joseph Schumpeter jokingly referred to capitalism as the declining form of feudalism. And Schumpeter kind of thought that socialism was going to naturally take over, that the Stalin system was able to push itself, impose itself on the West, because the West, in pursuing egalitarianism and democracy in its social system, had destroyed its own protective class, the aristocrats. The aristocracy of Europe was a warrior aristocracy whose function, whose family traditions were about protecting society against enemies, foreign and domestic. So you had a whole class of people who their function as a class was protective. You then got rid of them. And Schumpeter called them the iron spine of Western society, the illiberal spine. He said that you can't have, everything can't be liberal. Everything can't be, you're free, you can do whatever you want, because then why won't people then just sell their country out for their own personal advantage? The atomization implied in progressive liberalism meant that people weren't loyal to anything but their own individual selves. Hannah Arendt calls it atomization, you know, where people just are for themselves. And there's a kind of breakdown of social consciousness, of people's awareness of, and so you have this multidimensional breakdown, because with Marxism you have people thinking of themselves not as Frenchmen or Germans, but as workers versus the bourgeoisie, right? The proletariat versus the owners of businesses. Then you have the racist thing, where it's, or, you know, the ethnicity of nationalism, the ethnic angle, where you have these, the emergence of German-oriented, you know, folkish racism and anti-Semitism. So these things, you could call them deformations of society, deformations of politics, have all kind of come in together. And what has emerged in the 20th century was totalitarian movements, fascism, national socialism, and communism.
Well, Jeff, would it be accurate to say that this warrior class that you're referring to, aristocratic warrior class, they were the primary fighters in the Battle of Vienna in 1683, where the Muslims invading Europe were stopped at Vienna? Would that be an accurate statement?
Yeah, I would. Yeah. I mean, how it started when the Roman Empire collapsed, you know, the term knight was a term in the Roman Empire for middle-class people who could afford to equip soldiers with horses, themselves, their own family, their clan with horses. So knights were associated with horses. As the Roman Empire fell and as cavalry was the decisive, the heavy German cavalry became the decisive weapon, it was who could get armor and who could get a horse. And they bred the horses. It's called cataphracted cavalry, that you could fight on horseback. Actually, through most of the ancient period, cavalry didn't fight on horseback. They actually dismounted to fight. They would ride to the battle, ride to the flank, and they would dismount. I think that Antiochus the Great was the first of the Greek/Roman commanders to actually have cataphracted cavalry, which meant the horses were wearing armor. The horses were trained not to be timid, to be able to ride over human beings and to do charges, you know, cavalry-type charges, to break the ranks. And, of course, the Romans defeated Antiochus the Great using elephants. Scipio Africanus, Scipio Asiaticus, the brother of Scipio Africanus, the guy who defeated Hannibal at Zama, was the guy that defeated Antiochus the Great using elephants. So this evolution of warfare and the importance of the horse brought the mounted knight, and then you had, because it was expensive, because you didn't have the IRS, you didn't have a lot of wealth, people were in subsistence farming. So how were you going to defend the community? Well, the wealthy people who could afford to arm themselves and train themselves were society's last refuge. And they stepped up in those societies, those places that survived. And that's how sort of modern Western civilization emerged out of, they used to call it the Dark Ages, the fall of the Roman Empire, emerged through this process of this forming of aristocracy and the church, you know, holding the literacy and carrying what was left over in terms of learning from pagan antiquity.
Amazing. Well, this is always fascinating, these discussions. I learn a lot. I know our listeners learn a lot, Jeff. Let's do a segue. And any updates on what's going on with China and Taiwan, sir?
Yeah, there is reported a buildup. The Chinese, of course, appear to still be preparing. There was earlier in the summer one military expert who is an American expert who's been in Taiwan was concerned that there was some kind of minor operation planned for August. Some kind of he didn't specify whether it was a raid or what it was. But that never materialized. But what we see are exercises. And the Chinese are showing the capacity to mislead. You know, aircraft have transponders, ships have something similar where they can be tracked, where we think we're tracking a Ro-Ro ship, which is a ship that can carry tanks. You know, it can carry automobiles for showroom floors in dealerships, but it can also carry, they're being retrofitted to carry tanks and self-propelled artillery and APCs, that they actually have demonstrated that they can make it seem that this vessel is somewhere else when it is actually hundreds of miles closer to, for example, Taiwan, right, than it is believed.
Right.
So
right.
They are developing tools in China for surprise attack, for their troop ships not being tracked, and increasing their sea lift capacity.
My friend, Command Sergeant Major Dan Page, he told me about the People's Liberation Army Navy taking a super tanker and converting it to be a hospital ship. That would be a very impressive piece of equipment, wouldn't it?
Yeah, most analysts think that this is for an invasion of Taiwan, but the military experts will point out that if you just look at it objectively about what you have to know to do a successful opposed landing, because an invasion of Taiwan would be an opposed landing. China doesn't have the experience. They don't have the effective command and control systems you would want to have to conduct such a, it would be a land, air, sea operation. And even a blockade, experts think that a blockade of Taiwan would break down, that they don't have the capability at the present time. What they're trying to do is develop that capability, but I have a different way of looking at it. If you look at Chinese and Soviet military writings and at their use of deception, the Chinese, you know, the book by the two colonels from, I think, 1999, it's called Unrestricted Warfare. If you look at that book, it is a piece of disinformation because they're saying, you know, we're going to kill you with death by a thousand cuts. We're going to do all these little things to you and we're going to defeat you that way. And nuclear weapons are obsolete. Nobody cares about those. We're not going to build a big nuclear arsenal. Well, they have been preparing all this time to build a big nuclear arsenal. And right now they're building that nuclear arsenal and they're going to have maybe in 18 months or 2 years, they're going to have as many or more nuclear strategic weapons as we do. And so I believe this has been a deception all along, because if you go back to the Soviet literature, they say the next world war will be a nuclear missile world war, and the nuclear weapon is the decisive weapon of the war. And that has not changed either for Russia or China. And if you look at nuclear war in terms of EMP warheads and nuclear warheads, a lot of our advantages in advanced technology. I mean, look at our fighter aircraft can't fly without a computer, onboard computer. The pilots can't fly it because of the way they're designed.
Right.
And so you get hit by an EMP, that fighter aircraft cannot be used anymore. And well, so who gets control of the air, right?
I got a follow-up with that. Some Boeing engineers I know, they were inspecting a MiG jet fighter and making fun of the vacuum tubes until one of the engineers said, gentlemen, if there's an EMP attack, our planes will fall out of the sky while these Russian planes with vacuum tubes will still be flying. Everybody stopped laughing and making fun of them at that time.
Yeah, which is a clear indication that, you know, people say, why is the conventional military of Russia and China, why are they so behind? And especially with China, which, you know, well, they do, you know, both China and Russia have some units that are very advanced, but they are not as wealthy as the United States. And they also don't believe that in a real war, those weapons are going to last very long. You know, the really super sophisticated, super expensive. I mean, what is the F-35? They were saying they cost $100 million. I think it's maybe $80 million now.
$80 to $100 million each.
Yeah.
Right.
So why make a combat aircraft so outrageously expensive when it in a real war, it's going to be useless? It's going to be knocked out right away by EMP weapons and nuclear strikes, by a lot of cheap weapons. And I remember when I was an undergraduate, there was a older guy in a class that I had who had worked in the Pentagon, and he said that they were discussing back in the 60s, the U.S. generals, well, you know, we ought to mass produce planes like we did in World War II because we can make them really cheap, and the expensive stuff's going to be, you know, wiped out in the first hours of a nuclear world war.
Right.
And that's sort of how the Russians and the Chinese think about these things.
Right, right. Well, I had a chance to inspect Russian-built armor at Fort Hood, Texas, and it looked like a high school shop project. The welds were very primitive welds put together kind of haphazardly, it looked like. But they'd run, they did shoot. Simple stuff. Very simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's a different, and of course, when you look at the Ukraine, one of the things that have gotten the Russians into trouble, people say how awful the Russian military is because they're fighting Ukraine and they're not doing very well. And these are among some of the reasons that if you, you know, I just pulled out, you know, A.A. Sidorenko, he was a Soviet colonel writing in the 70s. He wrote a book called The Offensive. He said, look, it's all about these nuclear weapons. It's not that infantry and tanks don't matter. Infantry and tanks are going to exploit the nuclear strikes. They're going to move through the radiation, you know, batten down the hatches, and they're going to come out the other side, and they're going to own Europe. but they're not the primary means of decision. The nuclear strikes make it just so that the Russian tanks drive through everything. Well, they can't do that in Ukraine because Putin has said the Ukrainian people are not Ukrainian, they're Russians. So they can't kill their own people. They're claiming that they're liberating them. So so that's why they're using disinformation warfare, information warfare, to break down Western support for Ukraine so that Russia can, you know, take the country over.
Here's our last break. We'll be right back.
Where the hearth is. In days gone by, the hearth was the center of the home, a social place where the family would come together to spend time and cook. The warmth of the Liberator rocket stove makes a house feel like a home. So, welcome home. 100% American made, the Liberator rocket stove heats for a fraction of the cost of other methods. Your home can be safely heated with firewood or wood pellets. The Liberator rocket heater is waiting to be part of your home. This unit ships directly to your door, or you can save $300 with a factory pickup. To order, go to my website, thelibertyman.com. That's thelibertyman.com.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Do you or someone you know suffer from chest pain, blood pressure, cholesterol, or irregular heartbeat? Are you looking for a more natural solution to overcome these health challenges? You hear the ads all the time. If this stuff's so good, why doesn't my doctor prescribe it? That's easy. Doctors are not trained in natural medicine. Extendivite Heart Tonic does want you to be as healthy as you can be, and it really works. Take Extendivite for 6 months and your doctor will say, "I don't know what you're doing, but don't stop. It's working for you." Get the dependability of Extendivite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
As I said to those who've joined the government, I have nothing to offer but blood, toil, tears, and sweat.
Statement that we need to inform people and educate them about the true goals of the Communist Party of China, which is to colonize the United States, have the lower 48 be free of all Americans because they've murdered all the Americans. That is their goal, isn't it, sir?
Well, that's my analysis, my conclusion, and of course it's controversial for me to say that. And the reason I say it is there's three pieces of evidence that I've seen. One is the defector Colonel Stanislav Lunev, who spoke Mandarin, who worked in China for the Russian General Staff as a spy, and worked in the United States. He was the deputy head of the GRU in the USA at the time of his defection. And when he defected with information about that at the end of the Cold War, in 91 and 92, the Russians and the Chinese got together to form, to unite their intelligence services, to share all intelligence on the United States, and to plan a future war in which the United States would be conquered and North America would be divided between Russia and China would get the lower 48 states, with other countries invited in for looting rights. And this is a rather stunning claim. Lunev faced, you know, severe criticism for bringing forward this information. A lot of people, you know, it's inconvenient for intelligence officials when there's politicians who are supported by businessmen who want to do business in China to repeat such a thing. Well, what makes this credible is it dovetails with other defector testimony, but it also dovetails with a discovery that was made by Epoch Times. One of the defectors from China brought information about a secret speech that the defense minister of China, Chi Hao-chen, had given in around 2002-2003. We don't know the exact date of the speech, or I don't know it, in which Chi Hao-chen talked about making a deal to get the land they need, the lower 48 states, to build a second China in.
New China.
He doesn't, I don't think he refers to it as New China, but he talks about a second China in the United States. And of course, you know, people say, well, this speech isn't true, it's apocryphal, he wouldn't say that. People point to, it's a very long and at some points rambling speech, but it really has brilliant strategic and economic insights in it. And one of the things I spoke, actually was introduced to and spoke to a U.S. colonel who was part of the team at the Pentagon that translated the speech and verified that she had given it. And the speech actually is saying the same thing that Lunev was saying. The speech, again, it's a confirmation of what Lunev said. It is also verified. They used Chi Hao-chen's speech pattern. Mandarin is a unique language, and the frequency of certain word use and patterns of speech, you can actually identify the speaker if you have a good sampling of his other talks that he's given. And this colonel said, we verified it was Chi Hao-chen that gave the speech. And you look at everything that China's doing, they are preparing a sea lift capacity. Why? They are suddenly building nuclear weapons. Why? They are developing biological weapons. And they're using people in the West that they have penetrated our pharmaceutical, you know, more than 20 years ago, China went into pharma, became embedded in our pharmaceutical industry, making vaccine precursors, making medicines. You know, 80% of the pills that we take are made in China, or the ingredients in them are made in China. And that is a very dangerous thing when a country wants to, and Chi Hao-chen said, wants to exterminate with the biological attack. It could be a chemical biological attack. We could get, there's such a thing as poisoning by a binary chemical weapon, right? The poison could be in our bodies. One element could be in our bodies already. And all they have to do is introduce the other element at one point. And so, you know, this is what is disturbing about the vaccine protocols. So this is what's disturbing about the whole COVID-19 pandemic, that it came out of China, and that you have these vaccine mandates when there were adequate, you know, viral treatments. And so you say, is this, are they groping their way towards a capability of attacking us? Because there's no virus that's going to kill everybody. It's going to kill 100 million Americans, because that's what Chi Hao-chen talked about, killing 100 to 200 million Americans. There's no virus that could really effectively do that. But if it's in combination with the treatment of the virus, the reaction to the virus, they use it, you know, the communist method is provocation. They do something that provokes us to do something that then they use to kill us. Right?
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting.
All right. Jeff, thank you.
Because you can handle the truth.